on Rambling About Cars. Nothing says the holidays like horsepower, and we have a little bit of horsepower to talk about. Santa might himself a nice new 720 horsepower sleigh to rocket around the world with. But we also have some hybrid news. We have some news on vehicles that we can finally get in the United States with the 25-year rule. And we have a few surprises along the way. So let's roll on this pre-holiday episode. It's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith. As always, co-host, friend, extraordinaire, Mr. Chris Bruce across the way. How you doing, man?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, I think this is going to be a shorter episode tonight. You know, it's not going to be, you know, like an hour and a half long one. I think the last week was right about an hour and 20 minutes. I think we're going to be a little shorter this week just because, you know, news around the world, around the automotive world is lighter right now than, you know, at kind of peak season. So there's
shorter, but still sweet, right? Still sweet.
Absolutely.
Still lots to talk about. Let's give listeners a few minutes to chime in here since we have a little bit of time. If you happen to be stumbling upon us for the very first time and you're like, what is this? You're catching us live, whether you're on Motor One on YouTube, Motor One.com on Facebook, Motor One.com on Twitter, wherever you're at right there, right now, you can type in a comment. We see it here live. It comes into our little command central. We can see it. We can respond. We can chat with you. And you know we love to do that. Group FBC, Ted Adam Green, we have some regulars here in the chat today. Thank you guys for coming back as always. Jump in, drop your comments. And if you happen to catch us on audio, we still love our audio listeners, whether you're on Spotify, Apple, Deezer, Podchaser, I think is the one that I brought up last week, which was a new one that I hadn't seen before, Amazon. Like a dozen audio platforms. We're there. We love you. Send us an email. podcast@motorone.com is the email. We love getting them. We love responding. And we're going to be talking about one of those a little bit later in the show.
Yes, we are. Totally. But let's kick things off. And you actually wrote this bit of news up for us. And that is that the Ford F-150 Raptor R is getting kind of a pretty major update, in my opinion. And it's funny that it's coming when it's coming. So let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously for 2024, Ford gave the F-150, the entire lineup, a minor refresh. And when I say minor, I mean, it's basically a squared off front end. The headlights are a little different. You've got a little different design to the LED surround. So it has just more of a squarish look. There's more of a squarish look on the fascia. There's Ford's new, what is it called? I don't have the thing in front of me. Proactive tailgate, I think, is what they're calling it.
Sure, but what about the Raptor R?
We're getting there. I gotta build this up, man. I gotta build this up a little bit. You got the trick tailgate there in the back. Inside is pretty much the same. We learned pretty much everything about the new 2024 F-150 a few months ago, except the Raptor R's horsepower. And at the time, Ford said, well, the current Raptor R has 700 horsepower from its supercharged 5.2 liter V8. 2024, it will have more than 700 horsepower. And that's all they would say at the time. And this was August or September. So
September was in my mind. Yeah.
It's been a minute. And of course, when the Raptor R debuted for the 2022 model year, 700 horsepower. It's neat. It's 2 horsepower less than the TRX. Ford, you couldn't find an extra 2 horsepower to say, hey, we have more power than the TRX. It's like a moot point, right? Because it's an absurd amount of power. Things crazy fast. It's crazy capable. Anyways,
I think you're killing Paul Atkinson right now. How much of a power upgrade? Tell the people how much more power.
Now we know it's 720 horsepower. So 20 horsepower has been added to the 2024 F-150 Raptor R. For the record, this is a version of the same 5.2 liter supercharged V8 that Ford offered in the previous generation Shelby GT500 that I believe was 765
or 60. But anyway,
760. Point being, the engine was certainly capable of more than 700 at the time. Cause I remember specifically talking to Ford about this. Ford had said, well, taking it from the GT500 to a truck application like Raptor R, they recalibrated the engine basically to offer better low-end performance, the trade-off being high-end power. And that does make a certain amount of sense here in a truck application. You're dealing with a much heavier vehicle where drivers are presumably using that low-end power. So now we're at 720, a little bit of a balance there. We got a little bit more of the high-end. Ford says it still has good low-end power, 640 pound-feet of torque. That hasn't changed, but Ford says the torque curve is a bit fatter. As far as getting that extra power, Ford said, I'm trying to remember, you know, I'm just going to pull this up.
Right now. A new engine calibration, and I'm quoting directly from your thing, you put this in quotes, reduced air inlet losses
are thank you.
Allowed Ford to get the extra 20 horses.
I loved that phrase, reduced air inlet losses. I had to ask them what that actually meant, and I did get a response from Ford. They were explaining that it's changes, just design changes to the hood, design changes to like that inner fender design, with the idea of getting more airflow to the air filter. So it's all before basically the air box and the air filter. Just they did some things to help airflow basically in the engine bay a little bit better. That and another engine recalibration. So
right,
what extra 20 horsepower.
Yes, what I think is so funny about this though is that I know we did a show about it last year when the Raptor R came out, and it was like, oh, why is it less powerful than the Ram TRX? And it, like, you know, and it was 2 horsepower less.
I mean, it was kind of silly, right?
Why didn't they try to tune it for more just for the marketing reasons? Why not make it 703? And now Ram is killing the Hemi, or, you know, basically all, Ram, Dodge, Jeep, like the Hemi is dead now. And so now that the Hemi's gone, they're like, okay, we'll just jack it up to 720. We can do that now.
Well, I mean,
the timing of it is so funny to me.
You're not wrong. It's something that I think people will notice, being a Ford. I won't say an enthusiast because I love all cars, but I've dabbled with Fords probably more than anything else. And I did work with Ford for a spell. It reminds me of the 03-04 SVT Cobra Mustangs.
Okay.
All through the 90s, Ford was playing catch up to General Motors with the Camaro, because that generation Camaro, it was just flat out beating the Mustang. I mean, you were getting, I think, like 300, 305, 320 horsepower in the Camaro when Mustang was struggling to get to like 250 or 260 thereabouts. So then the Camaro goes away in 2002. I think you were getting 325 horsepower at that point out of the SS with the Ram Air and all that. And then in 03, then here comes the Terminator Cobra with 390 horsepower that's supposed to put the kibosh on everything GM, just as the Camaro went away. Now, obviously, I mean, vehicle development, that doesn't take place over the course of, like, you know, a few months. So I'm sure it was in the works ahead. But the timing was just kind of one of those cases of, okay, now that the competition's gone, let's bring out the baddest of the bad. And here we are with the Raptor R. Now that the TRX is going away, let's bring out the baddest of the bad. Technically speaking, though, the Ram TRX still exists for the 2024 model year. That's the end. That's the last. So you can say, okay, 2024 Raptor R, 2024 Ram TRX. There they are. And the whole talk, I mean, we fuss around numbers, and I know people love to fuss around numbers, but when we're talking 700 versus 702, it's like, it's such a ridiculous point, because both trucks are crazy fast. They have excellent performance. Are you going to notice the extra 20 horsepower in the Raptor R? I don't know. I would venture to say probably not. I mean, maybe in certain areas, in certain envelopes, in certain conditions. So, I mean, it's really a numbers game that we're talking about here. And at least with this, I mean, Ford is basically stepping up and saying, okay, the most powerful internal combustion truck is going to be the Raptor R. Because, I mean, obviously, EVs like the GMC Hummer, even the new Tesla Cybertruck. I mean, they're going beyond that. But Ford could lay claim to, hey, of the legacy automakers, we're going to have the most powerful combustion pickup truck. And on that front, is there still time for a special edition TRX to have 725? I mean, this is total 100% just rambled here. But I was thinking about that when I was writing this. How many freaking special edition TRXs have we seen?
Okay, yeah.
How hard would it be to give it a tune, right? And here's their final edition TRX-R or TRXX. Yeah. I don't know. You know, marketing people, be a little creative on that. I think
that's going to happen.
I highly doubt it, but I think it would be awesome and hilarious at the same time.
So one other thing we should add, that the other change to the Raptor R is that it does have new headlights, just like kind of the other F-150 range. And it's also going to be available with a head-up display. That's the only other change for the 2024 model. So you get more power, different headlights, optional head-up display. And
the head-up display is available on numerous F-150 models. It's not just the Raptor R. So
I should have said. Yeah.
That's the crux for 2024. The final piece of the puzzle, if you will, coming just a few days before the end of the year. I mean, we do know, we did a pricing post on the F-150, and if I remember correctly, a fully optioned Raptor R is close to 120 grand. Now, mind you, that's not the starting price. That's
right
with every option box clicked. The starting price for the Raptor R 2024, I believe, is still somewhere around 110 or so, somewhere in that neighborhood. So not cheap by far.
No, but I think that's our Raptor R talk. But I don't have a good segue for this one. I'm sorry. I just don't. Well, wait. The Raptor, the updated Raptor R is a 2024 model. And in 2024, there's a whole bunch of additional cars, foreign market cars,
you will be able to
legally bring into the United States. Now, I do this caveat every year whenever we do this story. Keep in mind, it's the car's production date, not like the vehicle's introduction. So if you find one of these cars, if it was made March 10th, 1999, then you cannot legally bring it into the country until March 10th, 2024.
And for the sake of our listeners outside the United States who might be wondering, what the hell are these guys talking about? There is a rule in place. Bruce, I think you have a better understanding of it than I do. The crux of it is, it is illegal to import a vehicle into the United States that's less than 25 years old for daily use. There are some clauses, some wiggle room where you can bring a vehicle in under special circumstances. But say, I mean, if I wanted to get, like a Nissan Skyline, which is obviously very popular in many parts of the world, I would have to wait for it to be 25 years old before I could import one here and drive it as a regular vehicle. So,
And there's also, when we were talking to Brad last week, there's also a caveat on top of that, because in some states there are still additional hoops you have to jump through. So he was talking about, I don't think this was during the show, was it? Where, you know, a lot of people in California will register their cars out of state so they don't have to deal
through
with those
quite
problems.
As many hoops. Right.
But for you in Michigan and me in Ohio, we can just bring them on in.
Inspections. What?
Exactly. It's smog testing. What the hell are you talking about?
Can't steal catalytic converters if you don't have them. Take that. My cars are perfectly legal.
So are mine. But yeah. But without further ado, our boss, our managing editor, Jeff Perez, he put together this list of 10 vehicles that'll be legal to bring into the country. And I think we should go through them, Smith. I think we should talk about them. There are two here, I think, are kind of the highlights. One of them, I think you'll disagree with me on. I can't wait to get there. But one of them is like the obvious one that
I already know where you're going with this. But no, go ahead, my friend, and take the lead here. I am ready to chime in. Oh, am I ready?
So we're doing this in alphabetical order. There'll be 10 cars. So first up, the Audi S3. This is a car I actually remember like in high school really wanting and looking at. Sorry, folks, I'm juggling and trying to put up a picture of it as I'm talking to you.
No, go ahead, because I can talk too. I mean, the S3, it's honestly, it's long been, I think, a vehicle that a lot of people want, you know, this generation. In the U.S.
It's basically a grown-up Volkswagen GTI. You know, it's more luxury, kind of just generally nicer, but still really cool. These have a turbocharged 1.8-liter engine, making 207 horsepower. So, you know, a little bit of a power bump of a GTI from the same period. And, you know, Europe got them, Japan got them, Australia got them. We didn't get them, so we can finally have one.
And I mean, I think they're neat, but I've never been super fond of Audis in general. Okay. And I mean, this, go ahead and send your hate email. You can send it to podcast or Motor. Hell, you can send it to chris.smith@motor1.com. That's my direct email.
Where are you going?
I don't ever see myself owning an Audi from this generation because they are maintenance nightmares. I mean, I would rather have an XJS V12 than any one of these.
Well, buddy, you and I are going to have a fun conversation about the next car because this is one I'm actually excited about. And that is the Audi A2, which I think I would bet a lot of American listeners might not be too familiar with this vehicle. This was essentially Audi's effort to make the most efficient compact car they possibly could. It used a ton of aluminum. It had, you know, very, very efficient engines. I'm going to tell you something. There was a version called the 3L, and that's because it used 3 liters of diesel for every 100 kilometers, and that equates to 78 US miles per gallon. And it had stuff like this version, the 3L version, had thinner glass, it had magnesium wheels. There was a version that didn't have power steering or air conditioning. They basically cut every bit of weight out of it they possibly could to get that kind of fuel economy. And it's one of those things where I look at this car and it's so ugly, it's cute. You know,
it has a cute factor about it. It definitely has a cute factor. It doesn't really do anything for me. And I'm one of those Americans that didn't really know much about this vehicle. So I can't comment on how reliable it may or may not be.
I can't comment on reliability either. I wasn't there to experience them, but it was a really interesting idea for the time. You can see here, our frequent commenter group at FBC says the A2 was ahead of its time. You know, they really tried something here and it wasn't the biggest success in the world, but damn it if it wasn't interesting.
Interesting and now available for the United States. Bring it in, import it, and you can drive it around. Then email us, podcast@motor1.com. Tell us your experience with it.
Next up here, this is one I was less familiar with, so I thought it was an interesting pick from Jeff, and that is the Hyundai Equus, which you might know in the U.S. they did sell the Hyundai Equus, but they did not sell this Hyundai Equus.
Not this one.
And Smith,
while
I'm pulling picks up.
They did sell this car in the United States. It was called the Lincoln Town Car. is what it was. It was called the Lincoln Town Car. That will make sense to people once we have some photos of. I mean, a big, stately, and I think appropriately awkward looking Hyundai for the period. Equus, big car. You could get it with a 3-liter V6, an optional 4.5-liter V8. It's just a sizable kind of stately sedan. And I think it's kind of neat.
I for for whatever reason, this one, I forgot to open in a tab, so it took me a second to find.
Oh, that's fine.
But yeah, it's a, you know, big Korean luxury sedan, for whatever that's worth to you.
And I mean, we've got, I mean, when you look at it, especially from the front, it's got that, just that big wide face with a fairly narrow grille. It has a major town car vibe, Lincoln town car from that era.
And the one cool thing about importing Korean cars versus, you know, British or Japanese stuff, both of which we'll be hitting up here in a minute, is that they're left-hand drive. So there's not that, oh, I have to, you know, kind of rejigger myself and figure out how to drive on the right-hand side. It's just kind of like driving an American car, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that makes it interesting as well. Plus, you're never going to see one of these, like, you're not going to pass yourself every day if you're rolling around in a Hyundai Equis. So yeah, an interesting car. Next one is
interesting. I'm very interested in the next one though. Go ahead.
Well, this is a car I think everyone's going to be familiar with. And if they're not, I'm going to be kind of shocked. Americans will be able to import the Mitsubishi Lancer Evo 6 into the country. So I have been doing, well, between me and Jeff, we've been doing these lists for years, and it's funny because there's always some version of Lancer Evo on the list because they made so many of them. So every year it's like, oh, now you can bring this one in. Oh, now you can bring this one in. And
now we've got to the best one.
I think the 7's better.
Yep, I said
so it. We got to wait like a little bit, but the 6 is really good too.
Well, the 7 we could get here, Bruce.
True. You're right. They did bring the, yes.
The 7 was the first generation that we could get here, and that was good. In my book of Evo, my manifesto of Evo, if you will, not to be confused with my manifesto of evil, which does not exist, by the way.
A different book.
Manifesto of Evo. This is number one. 6 is number one. 4 is number two.
Okay. Yeah,
but this is the one. Okay.
But yeah.
Five is good.
Five is okay. But yeah,
six seven is number one. Perfect. 4 is number two. The X10 is probably my third. I very much like that.
I very much
like that Evo. And yes, Rubek, you see bonus points if you get the TME Tommy Mac edition. Yeah.
Yep.
This car, like many people, I think, I was introduced to this through PlayStation,
Gran Turismo
back in the day. And then, because I also used to watch a lot of Jackie Chan films, and I realized, oh, and a lot of his movies, he's driving an Evo. And I fell in love with the car, and I fell in love with the 6 more than any. That's also what I really started to get into stage rally. And I was a big Tommy Mac fan, still a big fan of Tommy Mac. And that's the car I would have. 276 horsepower, the turbo 4. Yeah, with air quotes.
So for anyone out there who doesn't know, there was a gentleman's agreement amongst Japanese automakers at the time that they wouldn't advertise anything with more power than that. The car could make more power, but the advertising limit was 276 horsepower. So does it actually... Basically, it's a game of how much more than 276 horsepower does it make? And we will be talking about that a lot here in just a minute. It on paper, it's 276 horsepower. In reality, it's probably a bit more.
Could be a bit more. I don't care. I love the way it looks. I love everything about the car. It's my choice. Of all of the vehicles on this list, this is number one by a very wide margin for me.
Also, thank you, Groupa FBC. GTRs kept getting more and more torque, yet no more power.
What? It's tuning.
Yes. So next up, one will be another really cool one that'll be nice to see here is the S15 generation of the Nissan Silvia. So there was S12, S13, S14. S15 was the final generation. And you're going to be able to get one now. And these are like super prized in the drifting community. Mm-hmm. Again, 2-liter turbocharged engine, rear wheel drive. Honestly, I don't think the S14s are very good looking, in my personal opinion. I think the S15 and the S13 are far more attractive. And so, yeah, I couldn't blame someone for wanting to bring one of these over, especially, you know, if you could somehow find one cheap over there and, you know, turn it into a track car or something like that. This is another car that kind of Gran Turismo made famous. Yeah.
I mean, I'm with you there. I think the S15 is the best looking of them all. I was never really a huge fan of the Silvia, but I find it interesting. I find the dichotomy interesting that while we were getting so many front wheel drive Nissan performance vehicles here, Japan and Europe, they were still getting some good rear wheel drive stuff. And I'm not saying the 300ZX is a slouch, but I mean, if you wanted something in that vein, the Z was pretty much your only option, right?
In this country, yeah. It's wild, though, if you think about Nissan in Japan at the time, where someone could, you know, walk into a dealer and, oh, do you want a Silvia? Do you want a 300ZX? Or,
yeah,
do you want
Godzilla? Let's just say it. What's finally coming to the United States? What's finally going to be available? The R34, which has become a legend in its own time. The R34 Skyline GTR, finally available, and I don't care.
I mean, I'm not going to buy one, but I want to see. I've never been that close to one.
Chris.Smith at MotorOne.com. That's the hate email. Oh, sorry, guys. I don't care.
You don't want to walk up to one of these at a car show and just like look at it and see it.
I think the R33 is a better looking car. This doesn't look bad by any means. It has fantastic performance. But if I was doing something Skyline related, I like the R33. I think the R33 looks better. I'm going to get the same engine. I'm going to get the same powertrain. I know there were some changes made for the R34, and I'm not really interested in getting that technical just to have an R34. It's available, and there are a lot of people that will want one, but I just don't care.
I totally respect that opinion, and I don't want to own one. I have no desire to own one, but I do want to see one. I want to go to a car show and actually be able to walk up and look at one of these, maybe even sit in it, something like that. Cause it's just been, it's a car that for basically the entire time I've, you know, cars have been like a thing for me, and that's not quite true. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but still from like Gran Turismo on, R34 GTR was like, you know, they call it Godzilla. It's like the giant killer. It's something that we never got in the United States. You could never bring it. People went to jail for bringing these cars in and like illegally modifying them. And we did a really good story on that recently. You know, it's just such like, it has so much presence about it that I just want to see one like for real.
Yeah. I mean, no? I might actually get hate mail on this one. I don't know. I would love to see it. I think it's a great looking car. It has a very muscular stance about it. The performance is obviously right there, but I'm just not interested. And maybe I'll be right up front about it. Maybe it's due to just the hype that has come about from this car over so many years. Maybe I'm just a little long in the tooth on that. I don't want to believe that's the case. I want to believe I'm a better person than that, but I'm probably not. There is a lot of people love the R34, and rightfully so. It's just not the one I would have.
Well, Electrified Light Vehicle says he's going to be importing one just for you, Smith. So
what's the import duty? I have no idea. But if we're talking about like some custom imports for Smith, there are any number of Falcons from Australia that I would have over an R34.
Okay. Again, it's not a matter of ownership for me. It's not a car I want to own. It's just a car I want to like actually look at and be close to because of, you know, just kind of the reputation that goes with it.
Go ahead, Bruce, go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to transition to our next car, which is something completely different.
Well, before we do that, I want to answer Goof FBC's comment here. The R33 is better looking. That's a hot take up there with 959s being generic, which I have said on the show before that
You're wrong now.
I'm not a fan of the 959 of the 959 styling. I'll admit that. I think I can back it up. It's subjective. I understand that. Here's my take on, I guess, what I'll call the core Skyline group, the R32, the R33, the R34. I mean, I know there are others in there, but when you talk Skyline, those are the three generations that people flock to, right? So the R32, very cool. The R32, in my mind, is like, okay, here's the somewhat humble car that we're going to make crazy. It kind of has that look where, okay, this is the more humble car first, and then we'll put add-ons.
People out here, I'm gonna have to zoom in. Hold on, one second. And the R32.
Yeah, it looks like to me, it was a humble car dressed up to be cool.
Okay, all right.
Not that it's bad. I think it looks fantastic. I just want to say, I think it looks fantastic. But it looks like the proper performance version was more of an afterthought. And I know that's not the case. But this is how I'm interpreting the lineup. The R34 is the car.
R33 next.
I'm going to jump to R34
first. Gotcha.
So R32, because I'm bookending it to support my R33 claim. So R32... Here's the humble car that we're gonna make, you know, into the supercar. R34, in my impression, R34 is the car they thought of once they realized, holy crap, we did something awesome with the R32. Let's like go from scratch and just design this with the idea of just being awesome in every way. And you have the R34.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm not taking anything away from the car. It's just not the one that I would have.
Okay.
To me, the R33 strikes a cool balance. It's like we still kind of had this humble feeling in the background, but it has just the right amount of bite that really appeals to me. I think it's a cleaner design. I think it's just a more satisfying design overall. If anything, I would say the R34 might be a bit shouty, might be trying to take itself a bit too seriously. The R33 is just like, here I am. I look good. Let's go kick some ass.
Okay.
That's my take on the R33. And we're looking at one now here on YouTube, and I just in love with the car all over again.
Fair points. I not disagreeing with you. I'm still sticking by my thing is I want to see an R34 up close.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I have it before.
I'll happily see one up close. I've seen R32s. Haven't seen an R33 either, but yeah,
I don't think I've
seen hopefully that. We'll get our chance, Bruce. Yep. They're coming our way. And in fact, electrified light vehicles is going to send me one. So yay. Apparently. I can't wait. I'll take all the parts off.
On our list, but that's a good pick. Alpha 155 GTA Stradale. That's a strong pick. Not on the list, but strong pick.
Well, let's kind of spend a little bit of extra time here on the R34. What do we got next here?
Well, the Pagani Zonda C12. This is a, you know, first off, it's completely different. Like we looked at like a normal person could afford a Silvia. A rich person could afford a GTR. This is like for the extremely wealthy is your Zonda C12. still an incredibly cool car. You know, Pagani, this is kind of what put Pagani on the map, kind of. And looks unlike anything else at the time. That amazing Mercedes V12 engine that sits in the back, just cool as all hell, you know. And something that's funny, that we actually had this conversation in our chat. So it has a 6-liter naturally aspirated Mercedes V12. And Jeff, who wrote the story, was quizzing us about how much power do you think a Zonda makes? And first gen launch Zonda, 395 horsepower, which you look at today and you're like, you know, Corvettes, like the number of performance cars that are like normal performance cars that beat that are just all over the place, but
normal performance cars. Bruce, I can order an F-150 XLT with 400 horsepower.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Perfect point. Yeah.
Not even a Raptor, an XLT. An XLT with the V8, but yeah, the Zonda, I guess it's such a limited supercar. It didn't occur to me that these weren't already available. I didn't realize that the first gen
they never sold them in the States. No.
Yeah, I didn't realize that the Zonda you couldn't get here. But I mean, it's such a niche car, and it's such a fantastic car. I mean, this is a 25-year-old car that still, it doesn't look modern today. It still looks freaking futuristic today.
Yeah.
That's how far ahead this is.
Change the headlights into like LEDs and you could sell this today. The amount of tweaks you would have to do to make this a modern, literally a truly modern supercar are so tiny.
Well, I mean, when was the last special edition Zonda released?
Jesus, they did 20 years.
They sort of have been selling it for all this time. I mean, wasn't there a special edition Zonda? Yeah, I mean, there are upgrades, but I mean, wasn't there a special edition Zonda still in like 2020?
I believe you're right. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just fantastic design, timeless design. And yeah, I didn't realize that it launched with 395 horsepower. Not that it's weak or slow, but we've become so jaded to much, much larger numbers.
Yeah.
A little bit of a shock.
An absolute beauty, though. And another car I want to see. Like, I want to go, the first person who imports one of these in the U.S., I want to see it for sure.
I want to sit inside because the interiors are unbelievable. Yes. Unbelievable.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Very happy to see that one.
So I kind of got to call Jeff out here. He cheated a little bit on this next one. And that is the 996. I pressed the wrong button. The 996 Porsche 911 GT3 is also now importable. It is, you know, introduced in 1999. You can bring it to the U.S. There aren't that many of them, though. Like, they were sold in the U.S. That's why I kind of said he cheated a little bit. Mm-hmm. But this is going to open up the population even more. So, you know, European cars that maybe, you know, low mileage or whatever, Americans are going to be able to bring them into the country.
And
now, granted, I mean, there were some already here, but now you can have more here.
Right. And I mean, collectors, especially Porsche fans, this is a big deal. This is a big deal for them.
Sure.
And I'm not saying this is a bad car. I think it's a fantastic car. I'm a big 911 fan as well. So, it's not my first choice to import.
Agreed.
But fantastic all around. Bring them on.
Yeah. Next one again, now for something completely different. the Toyota Crown. I'm clicking on buttons here, so I can't tell you which generation this is, but the Crown is basically one of kind of Japan's automotive icons.
Oh, yeah.
Introduced in 1955. This one, I'm sorry, this would be the 11th
generation. I believe this is the 11th gen Crown, which launched in 1999. Just a big, stately Toyota sedan. We're already seeing quite a few Crowns of earlier generations cropping up at various shows. I've seen a few just like Redwood photos, Redwood videos, especially we're seeing crowns coming in. And now the
it's a model that's been around since 55. Yeah. So, you know, as every year goes by, more and more of them can come into the country because they passed that 25-year point. Mm-hmm. Eric Nefron says you could get a Century, which it does kind of look like a Buick Century, doesn't it? A little bit. And that's kind of the same role that it fills too. So yeah, that's just a quick one. And then again, we're going to end with something really hot, and that is the TVR Tuscan Speed 6 will be eligible to come into the country. These are TVR, for anyone who doesn't know, is a British automaker that started, if I'm not mistaken, mid 50s, early 60s. And they always did, you know, low weight was always the name of the game. Traditionally, they used a lot of Ford engines, but by this point, they were starting to develop their own power plants. So this one has a 3-liter inline six, later model, or I'm sorry, 3.6 liter inline six. Yeah. I misspoke. Later models, they pushed that to 4 and 4.2 liters, but this is obviously the earliest one. Another car with maybe some slight tweaks could still look modern today. You know, the headlights are what's aging it, in my opinion.
Yeah. I guess I don't really have anything else to add there. The headlights always made it look weird. I was never really a fan of that design choice. But I still don't think it's a bad car. I think it looks pretty fantastic, actually. And it would certainly be a hoot to drive. I can't remember if I was in an older TVR. It would have been when I was pretty young, and I can't remember exactly. It was either a TVR, maybe it was even a Triumph. I can't remember what it was. But, I mean, okay. TVR, obviously, lots of vehicles have been around. Super excited to see a Speed 6. If somebody wants to import one of those for me, I would be happy to give you rides anytime.
Yeah. That's a smattering of the cars that are going to be available. We picked out 10. TVRs, when Lotus are built just a bit too well, are too reliable for you. That comes from our buddy group at FBC. And Eric Nefron, I'm sorry, I misspoke. I thought you were talking about the Buick Century. You were talking about the Toyota Century. Which is their even higher tier of luxury. And yes, that has a V12 and is a Rolls-Royce competitor. So I misspoke there. But we picked 10 cars. Obviously, there are going to be more, you know, basically anything in 1999 that you could start bringing over, and obviously anything before that. So we're kind of getting to this point where the cars you're bringing in feel modern to me. And maybe that's just because of how old I am. I don't know. But, you know, next year you're going to bring in a car from 2000. That doesn't feel, you know, that kind of old fashioned or, you know, going to be lacking performance or something like that to me. So it's
an indication of the times, because we know the age of vehicles registered and in use on the road, the age is getting older. Right. The average age of a car on the road is what, up to 11 or maybe even 12 years old at this point now. It's creeping up there. So when you talk about 20 or 25 years, once upon a time, at least in the United States, 25 years old was sort of the threshold for vehicle officially becoming a classic car. And I think that might still be the case in some states as far as registering a vehicle. If you want if you want to register a vehicle as a classic vehicle, there's usually a cheaper registration fee, but it comes with limitations. You can only drive it so much, or you can only use it in parades. In Michigan, I was thinking about putting a classic registration on the Mustang. But the stipulation there was, you can only drive it to car shows. You can only drive it in parades. And it's
like, interesting. In Ohio, the Nissan has historic plates on it, and it actually comes with some advantages. You never have to... Essentially, you never have to renew the plates. My dad was telling, I believe in 2050, we have to get new plates for it. Ohio. Yeah. That's yeah, the way well, the and again, it's going to vary state to state. It's just like this the yep. import stuff we were talking about.
There
and
are many. Quick, Smith,
I looked it up. Average age of a car in the U.S. is 12.5 years.
Okay, so 12.5. So, I mean, once upon a time, a 10-year-old car would be kind of done and over with. Now it's the average. It's the average. Right. So how many more cars out there? I mean, my Mustang is a 95. I took it out of the shop the other day because, you know, we haven't really had any winter weather in Michigan here to speak of. I just don't want to get it full of salt because we use a lot of salt here in Michigan. The roads are clear. So I took it out, just did some errands with it. It doesn't feel really that old. When I drive it around and park it in the lot, I'm surrounded by, up here, I'm surrounded by lots of like early mid 2000s pickup trucks and
right.
90s pickup trucks and early mid 2000s and 90s SUVs. So it's really, it could be a classic vehicle, but it's really not, it doesn't feel like a classic. And yeah, right. The Michigan registration laws are terrible. That's one of the things I can't stand about the state. They have a stupid insurance set up with no fault insurance, and they have stupid expensive registration fees. And yes, when I went to register a class of vehicle, well, you can only drive it in parades or go to car shows. Okay, so if I want to take it for a nice drive on a Sunday afternoon, no. All right, then.
That's dumb.
Yes, it is. But we're not talking about the asshattery of Michigan. We are talking about
that's fair.
Actually we're done with the imports. Oh, that's what I wanted to say. All the listeners out there, is there a vehicle that we didn't mention that you are acutely aware of that you want to bring to our attention? Email us podcast@motor1.com. Let us know what vehicle is 25 years old that can be brought into the United States now that you want to see, and we'll talk about it because that's what we do. We talk about stuff.
And while we're talking about, do we want to go ahead and read our email?
Let's do that. Harf of Jar, a longtime podcast listener, longtime rambler. We appreciate you. And we apologize profusely because you sent us an email a while ago that snuck past. I think the spam filter caught it up.
I don't know why it might have been
the attachments, because you sent us a lot of photos that I really appreciate. So just future reference for ramblers out there, send us an email, send us some photos, maybe just send like one or two and say, hey, if you want to see more, let me know. That way stuff like this doesn't happen again. Because this is a super great email. This goes all the way back, Bruce. This goes all the way back to Thanksgiving in the United States. Right. If you remember, we held a special cheap car challenge of, I can't remember the parameters. I think it was like a reliable car for the family for $3,000.
Right. It was a road trip car to go to Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah. And I think it was $3,000. I can't remember this price, but yeah.
I can't remember my picks. Oh, wait. I got the nice shuttle bus for the family that I rented.
With a stripper pole.
That's not a stripper pole. That's for safety.
Okay.
I'm going to take that to the grave. But Harf of Jar sends in an email. I'm going to read the email right now. Hello, Chris and Chris. Hope you're well and great show as always. Your latest cheap car challenge piqued my interest because by coincidence, I've actually done it, and I love, love, love stories like this. So thanks for sending this in. Earlier this year, I bought an E46 BMW 330D Touring for the euro equivalent of $3,000. Let's just pause there for a moment.
Take a look at it.
Let's pause there for a moment. While Bruce, I know you're working on some photos.
I am.
An E46 BMW for $3,000. What could possibly go wrong? Now,
and the thing is, folks, you'll see it in just a second. It looks really good too.
It does. And I'm not setting this up for failure. I'm saying this because I have been tempted many, many, many a time by an inexpensive BMW. And here in the States, at least, usually when they're that inexpensive, there's either many things already wrong or many things about to be already wrong. So I even applaud you. Even if
Carpenter paid 3,000 euros, which obviously would be, you know, maybe closer to $5,000, you could not find that car in the U.S. for $3,000 to $5,000.
I applaud you for this purchase. Now I'm going to keep reading. Bought it for the equivalent of $3,000 U.S. currency. Admittedly, I've spent some money on aesthetic improvements. Okay, that's okay. Fair. But also on getting the routine maintenance up to date. So mechanically, it's still a $3,000 car. In the summer, we took it on a 1,400-mile round trip from Surrey to the Scottish Highlands over a four-day period. That sounds like a beautiful drive.
I think we're looking at the Scottish Highlands in that photo we got right here.
The car is on about 136,000 miles throughout the trip. 2 days or 10, 11 hours of driving, did not miss a beat. And I completed the entire journey on 2 tanks of diesel. That's not bad. So I won the challenge, right? I'd say that's a victory for the challenge. You didn't just pull up photos and ads on the internet. You bought one. You went out. You did an amazing road trip, an amazing journey. And you lived to tell the tale, and you didn't have to bring the car home on the back of a wrecker. So bravo. Please enjoy the photos from the trip. One with our three-car garage. There's a Honda CRZ and Lexus GS450H in there. Nice. Having impressed with being an amazing road trip car, she is shortly getting her winter treat of a full rear subframe refurbishment and reinforcement. Common issue on E46s where the rear subframe trunk floor cracks. Getting new brake lines, new bushings, and a couple of replacement wheel bearings. Thanks and keep up the good work. Thank you for sending this email into us. If we could have emails like this every week from Ramblers, it would make our day. Yeah. Because we love to talk about cars, but we also love to see people enjoying them. And it's a great looking BMW. Of course, I'm an auto journalist, so I'm like morally obligated to love wagons. Fortunately, I loved wagons before I got into this profession. So it's an easy thing to pick up. The car looks great. The scenery looks great. Just wonderful all around. And if you are listening here on audio, if you have a chance, jump over to Motor One on YouTube. You can pull up the video here. Jump up to about the 50-minute mark. That's where we're talking here about the road trip. You can see some of these photos. We would love to hear all of your adventures. Send us your photos. Tell us about what you're driving. Tell us about where you're going. And if you bought a cheap car and you did an awesome challenge, we especially love to hear about that too.
Smith, I think we need to take this show on tour just so we can go to the Scottish Highlands, because this looks gorgeous.
The rambling tour?
Everything about this looks fantastic.
Can you say the rambling tour?
Exactly.
I can. The rambling tour.
Yeah. These are.
Yeah, that's
the rambling tour. Yeah. Yeah. Bravo. Thank you for the email. Thank you for the photos.
Keep them coming. Great job. Email us podcast@rotor1.com, everybody. Keep them coming. We've got a little bit more to talk about here on the news front, don't we, Bruce?
We do. So this is something that just kind of came out as a surprise. And I'll be totally honest with you. We right now are treating this as a rumor rather than confirmed fact, because kind of where it's coming from. And so let me explain. There is a Korean, from what I can tell, they are kind of a general business news site. So not automotive focused, but like tech and business. And they ran a report saying that the Hyundai Envision 74 concept is going into production. And they said that was confirmed. I have to put a caveat on this. According to our translation of the article, because obviously it was in Korean and no one on our staff speaks Korean. So, you know, there's a site called DeepL that's really good for translations. And then there's obviously Google Translate. So we ran it through those, and both of them basically said that someone spoke to this website and confirmed that this vehicle is going into production. Now, just a second, they're only going to make 100 of them, allegedly. 70 of those would be road cars, 30 of those would be race cars.
And these are still hydrogen fuel cell cars, Bruce?
They are, yes. They would make 800 horsepower from a hydrogen-powered dual electric motor setup. And that 800 horsepower is actually about 130 horsepower more than the concept had.
Right.
And allegedly, production is beginning in 2026. We obviously, you know, something like this.
Lots of allegedly.
We did reach out to Hyundai, and they kind of gave us that they can't really comment on future product, Hyundai US. So we don't really know, if I'm honest. It's a vehicle, though, that excites us every time we see it. And it's just interesting to see, you know, a site, you know, it's not a completely like dark webby, like weird website. It's a legit site. It's just one that we aren't super familiar with. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
And it's also not the first time we've heard something like this from a Korean news website. We had something similar back in the summer from a site that was saying, hey, this car is going into production, and by the end of the month, Hyundai is going to announce it. Well, that was, what, like 7 or 8 months ago? And
right. I believe that was August.
No announcements yet.
No.
So, unconfirmed. Take it with a grain of salt. One thing that I do find a little interesting here, well, two things that I'll mention here. One, we spoke to Hyundai back in the summer regarding that initial report, and we were told, hey, there are no plans at this time to put this car into production. That was a pretty clear answer. No plans at this time to put this into production. Now we're being told we don't comment on future speculation. There's room for interpretation there. That could be something that may be nothing. It's a difference in terminology. I'm just pointing that out because I find it interesting. Instead of, we're not putting this into production, not commenting on future product or future speculation. So interpret that however you will. I just found that interesting. The second point that I want to bring up, I've mentioned this before. If you, and by you, I mean anybody out there listening right now, wherever you're at, even if it's days after this podcast aired, if you've seen somebody make a negative comment on this car, email it to me, podcast@motorone.com, because I have not seen one tiny negative comment about this car. Nobody agrees on the internet except cute cat videos and the Envision 74. Am I wrong here, Bruce? Have you seen anything negative on Envision 74 aside from Hyundai, you need to make it. You're stupid if you don't.
Right. I have not.
Well, I take that back. I have seen some criticism of it being a hydrogen fuel cell EV, which, I mean, concept, at least it's being considered, right? I guess I have seen a little bit on that. People would love to see this car, you know, with like a screaming inline six or something of that nature, I think, or even a turbo four. I don't know that there's really anybody looking for a V8 in this. Honestly, I wouldn't want it with a V8. I would want it with an inline six or a turbo 4, or if they're going to make it with just the straight EV powertrain, go for it, man. Just make it. It's a great design. It's a great looking car. I think there's potential there. The response has been overwhelmingly positive. And I think Hyundai, it would be very short-sighted if they didn't do something with this, even if it's not just, we're going to put the Envision 74 into production as is, even if you take a lot of design cues from this and come up with something different that's still quite similar, do something with it. That's sort of my take here. The report, like I said, completely unconfirmed.
Right. And just so, fully on the up and up here, I will show you, here is the translated version of the section of the report, and I'll read it for any of our audio listeners. According to the industry, and again, this is a translation from South Korean, so any weird grammar, stuff like that, is because it's a translation. According to the industry on the 17th, Hyundai Motor Company has decided to mass produce only 100 units of the hydrogen electric concept car Envision 74 based on the Pony Coupe design for the first half of 2026 and is discussing detailed plans with partners. The possibility of mass producing the Envision 74 has been raised several times, but this is the first time it has actually been confirmed. The decision to mass produce the Envision 74 is interpreted as reflecting the strong will of Hyundai Motor Group chairman Chung Yoo-sun. And it also mentions that he hired Albert Bierman from the BMW M division in 2015. So, yeah.
So there you go. Take it as you will, but it was a little bit of a surprise. And you know what? I would like to see something happen. I'm pretty sure a lot of other people would as well.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about the Toyota Crown Sport real quick, or what do you feel?
I think we should. It's a pretty interesting vehicle. It's one that we're not getting after talking about everything that's legally available in the United States. Let's talk about something that isn't. We have the Toyota Crown Sport SUV that was announced with the hybrid option, plug-in hybrid option. It's not going to be available in the United States, which is a bit sad because I think it looks pretty mean. It's got 302 horsepower from its hybrid powertrain, so it's not going to be really slow. I mean, I don't think it's really being billed as a high performance vehicle, right? But it is billed as being pretty sporty and 302 horsepower. It'll be kind of snappy. It's being advertised
more than any of my cars have.
It's being advertised with a 56 mile electric only range, with a full battery charge and a full tank of fuel. Toyota is saying this will be able to go 746 miles. One thing, Bruce, did you notice the brake size on this car?
I'll be honest with you. I did not notice the brake size.
Toyota, and I double checked and then triple checked this with Toyota's English language press release for the Crown Sport SUV. 20 inch front brakes with six piston calipers. And it rides on 21 inch wheels. That's a huge number. That's what's coming straight from Toyota.
That's some big stoppers.
When I look at photos, I thought, okay, I'll be clever. I'll zoom in on some photos here to see if I can catch some tire sizes on the tires, just to confirm. Okay, if I'm seeing like a 20 inch tire on there, well, there's no way it's 20 inch brakes.
Right.
But all of the photos here that Toyota released, the tires are completely blank. So, I mean, there's been some manipulation there going on, some photo manipulation. I'm not saying Toyota's wrong. I'm just saying that was a really shocking number. 20 inch front disc brakes with 21 inch wheels. And I mean, I don't know if there was a mix up in translation. It's something that I like to talk to Toyota about, just because it kind of pulled me out of the moment here a little bit. It looks pretty cool. I mean, obviously we're getting the Crown Signia for the United States, which isn't this. The Signia is different. This is coming up. Yeah, go ahead.
Toyota all of a sudden basically decided to turn Crown almost into a sub brand of its own.
Oh, for sure.
Where they're high end Toyotas, but they're not quite Lexuses. That's kind of where they're sitting in the lineup. And they've introduced a bunch of different models. Most of those are available in Japan only, but some of them are also coming to the US. And if you bring one to the US, if it's a success, then, you know, you can't completely rule out bringing more of them here. So, yeah, it's interesting what they're doing with the Crown mark, where there's now like Toyota, Crown, and Lexus, and Crown is kind of like Buick almost, you know, in the classic GM kind of lineup between Chevy, Buick, Cadillac. It's We just wanted to hit it real quick because a 302 horsepower, not sporty, but I mean, with that amount of power in a five row crossover, it's certainly not going to be slow.
No, it's not going to be slow. It has sporty looks, 20 inch front brakes with six piston calipers. It's like, what?
Yeah.
You know, that's something I would like to get a little bit more information on from Toyota. And Jonathan Brown makes the comments, astutely so, I might add, sort of reminds me of the Ferrari Puro Sangue. And I believe we say as much in our article because it kind of does, right, Bruce?
There's a little bit there. Yeah.
Not
from
wrong.
The right angle, it's definitely there.
Yeah, not wrong at all. I mean, it's crown on the inside. I think it has neat looks on the outside. I would love to see a version of this come to the United States. We already have the crown and then the crown signia. I think there will be more to come on this.
For
those of us on this side of the pond. So,
yeah. So some housekeeping stuff. Smith, you are going on vacation next week. I am not. So there will be a Rambling About Cars next week. The format is still up in the air. I have a lot of our staff totally should be, and they're doing it, are taking a vacation. So I am trying to find a co-host. I've got two people who are possibly going to be joining me. We'll see. But if it ends up just being me chatting with you folks and doing car news, that's what it's going to be because
you know, are a machine, man. You are an animal.
It's just that if it fell on Christmas, that would be one thing, but it's, you know, it's going to be after Christmas. It's after the holiday. I would feel weird if I didn't do the show. So even if it's just me talking to you folks and talking about car news, maybe that's what it's going to be. Like I said, I've possibly got two guests coming on. We're going to see. But for the Ramblers out there, there will be a Rambling next week.
And let me just say something in nod and admiration for you, Mr. Bruce, because we are on episode 155 of the current format of the Motor One podcast, Rambling About Cars. We did the Motor One podcast before, where Bruce and I weren't the co-hosts, but we were on the show frequently.
You're occasionally on. It was kind of a rotating chair.
Right. But this is episode 155. I don't think you have missed one.
No, I haven't.
I've
been on every episode.
155 episodes, one per week, 155 straight weeks. I don't know that there's another podcast out there in existence with that kind of straight record.
Yes,
155 straight weeks.
Yeah.
Wow. You have my admiration, my respect. All the Ramblers out there, Bruce is the key. He's the cog that just keeps this podcast cranking. So,
and in years past, we've banked episodes where we would we would basically record two this week and release the one. And it just didn't work out that way this year. And that's not a complaint. I really like doing the show and I will be here next Wednesday. Maybe it'll be a short show. Maybe it'll be 40 minutes or something. Like, I don't know. I've got some things in the works. We're going to have something here though. So there will be a show.
My friend, you are a machine. You are dedicated to cars. You are dedicated to the Ramblers out there.
Yeah.
Bravo, man. We love you.
I like doing this. That's the secret.
Well, so do I. Now you're making me sound bad.
Oh, no, no.
We all need a little break. I'm going to be,
I apologize.
No, you're not. I'm very, very good at making myself sound bad. You make me sound better. I'm going to be in Illinois, visiting some family in Illinois for the first time in over a decade for holidays. So
very good.
To the family members there that listened, I appreciate you listening and I apologize that we haven't been more involved. That changes this year. And I'm looking forward to being there.
But yeah, that'll be our show for tonight. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for all your comments. Yeah, I think that kind of settles up everything. So I got to finish with my catchphrase. So good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Thank you so much for spending time with us. And I'll be back next week. So bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. We'll see you later. Happy holidays wherever you're at. We love you.